Thanks. Anybody have any questions, comments? Okay. Thank you.
I see Chris Kelly's hand is up, John.
Oh, sorry, Chris, I didn't see you.
Thank you. We just wanted to say that we do support the resolution. We're a little concerned that to do the full space study that I think you're envisioning is going to cost a bit more. So I think if you wanted to confer with Brendan Masterson or the staff over at DPW, maybe we can settle on a cost that seems a bit more realistic. That's all.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Can I just, since Brendan's on the line, is it too soon? Brendan, do you have an idea of what a study like this might cost?
We were thinking it was going to be more around 150.
150.
But depending on the full scope, you know, we may have to come back to get additional funds.
Thank you. All right, personnel contingency. There is actually an error, an omission on there. The Board of Elections, it was supposed to be two positions, not just the one. So we could just modify that. And essentially, this is moving the positions into contingency for now, as we spoke about yesterday, and then sort of seeing how things go in Q1 potentially. Legislator Walter?
Thank you. So, you know, I certainly appreciate the sort of the motivation behind this. I need to make a particular, just express some particular concern in two areas. One is the professional standards person in the sheriff's office. This was something that came up after a year and a half of work by the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force, the importance of this, the conversation of, you know, figuring out whether something is needed or how it's needed or how it fits, I really appreciate. I would say in this case, this is something that a year and a half of work went into figuring out that this was really needed. So that work has been done. I would also say that, and I don't know if this system has been expanded enough, but for myself, I had a lot of questions and concerns about the positions in mental health. And in my conversations with Tara, I feel very, very differently. They, other than one, which I have in a resolution to remove, I honestly feel like the descriptions are not as well reflective of what these actually are, unfortunately, because what I had garnered from reading about them and then in my conversations with Tara, I was enlightened by what the relevance of these are, not to, and I think this is important, not to where mental health needs to go, but actually with where it needs to be now. And I think that's an important thing, that originally I was thinking that it was a re-envisioning of what mental health needs, but it's really not. It's recognizing actually existing problems that have to be resolved. So I would encourage anyone to take an opportunity to really get this breakdown from Tara at some point, because it really is reflecting a current present needs assessment and not, as I once thought it was, of an envisioning of a future. So I just wanted to put that out.
Legislator Bartels.
Well, since Tara is with us, can we take a couple minutes and talk about that? Is that okay?
She's ready.
Thank you.
Does someone have a direction that
do you want to, Tara, do you want to do what you did with me and just explain for each of those? I mean, it's only 1, 2, 3, 4 positions, and so maybe that might be helpful.
Okay.
Chairman Gravaris, do you mind if I go first?
Sure.
Sorry, Tara, just in terms of Chairman Gravaris, you mentioned kind of waiting for the first quarter. Is that in regards to sales tax?
Yes.
And again, I can go down this discussion with sales tax yesterday. Sales tax continues to grow. There was more reports out there that, you know, our retail sales sector is higher than it ever has been. from March of this year. So are things continue to grow and the trends continue to grow?
So for just let me stop
quarter,
you. Let me just stop you for
is only 135 days out in terms of the end of that quarter. I don't expect a change. I am confident of that sales tax number. I will say too, in terms of how we budget, every new position that's in this budget was necessary, was a priority. From mental health to the sheriff's department to all the departments that are on this call right now. We evaluate every position. I have an accountant that I desperately need in my own department. We wouldn't budget unless we needed these positions. And the same thing goes with the sales tax number. It isn't astronomically high. It's actually based on trends that we see and based on what estimate we have. And I present that to the whole committee.
And let me just say that I did last night go back and look at it, and I even asked Amber and Natalie to remove it. I'm removing my amendment for adjusting the sales tax number for now. I believe that we are closer than I originally thought we were on that number, based on looking at the percentage trend over the last prior to COVID, but the years prior to that. So I'm on board with you on that now.
Okay.
And again, I said it, and when the letter went out requesting the ranking, I said it then, and I'll say it again, is I understand that all these positions are necessary. However, if the boat is sinking, which would be thrown overboard first? That's the question. It's not a matter of everybody's necessary. I understand that. But if we don't have a choice per se, which of course we do, but I'm just using it in that context, then who would be the person's first choice to be hold off on for a while?
I think we've experienced that through the pandemic. And the first thing this administration did was hold any vacancies. I will say it speaks to our bond rating too, where we have strong fiscal management as well as budgetary flexibility, where we're able to hold these vacancies. Every year there are vacancies. We hold them. If God forbid, things go downhill real quick, we'd do that. We'd hold expenses, travel, and conferences. That's the operations that we do as an administration.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a comment on that?
Yes.
Thank you. Due respect to the Commissioner of Finance on this, you know, specific to the one position, the accountant in finance, all due respect, there was a accountant in finance, and it was, you know, reclassified, and now that person who didn't have accounting background is the communication specialist. So that's one of the concerns I have with putting an accountant back in finance. That was the eighth accountant.
Legislator Rock, I will say this position was a fiscal officer at one point, and I understand the finances of the county. I don't need a fiscal officer. I need an accountant.
But what confidence do we have that the county executive is not going to reclassify that to some sort of communications position or hire somebody in that job that's not actually going to do accounting? I personally don't have that confidence, and I think that several of my fellow legislators lack the same confidence.
Can I just stop for a second? Can I ask who the caller 518-852-0147 is? Caller 518-852-0147. Can you just state your name for the record?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes. We can hear you.
This is Legislator-elect Phil Erner.
Thank you. Okay. I'm sorry. Tara, I'm sorry, if you're ready to go back, we'll go back.
Thank you. If I could, I'd like to be able to start in terms of trying to explain the need for these additional positions by sort of giving an explanation of the department as it stands today. I think that as Legislator Walter had explained, is that it's helpful to be able to understand what exactly is the plan. Right now, since at this time and since we were no longer providing direct services through our licensed clinics, the resources that have been associated with the Department of Mental Health have been aligned with our legal responsibilities for operating a local governmental unit. The designation as the LGU allows for us to legally and responsibly accept the millions of dollars that have been coming from the state through state aid and flows through our county and passed on to our community-based organizations for the direct provision of services, of behavioral health services. Through our designation, we're responsible for having a number of things. We're responsible for having an assisted outpatient treatment monitoring program. We're responsible for having three separate single point of access processes that are our most direct link to Ulster residents. We get applications and we process those applications and we connect individuals to resources. The resources that are connected to the department right now allow for us to continue the work as it has been. However, in order for us to meet the vision of what our county exec has in terms of having the department become more robust and more directly connected to the experience of residents that have a mental health need or behavioral health need, we would need to have additional resources in terms of personnel in order to be successful in doing that. So that's really the frame from where we start. Right now, our resources are to be able to provide the service of being a local governmental unit. However, we're in the middle, we're still in the grips of an opioid epidemic. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We have a mental health crisis with regards to folks that are trying to maintain with the pandemic and having this prolonged acute period of uncertainty that's connected to it. We have a housing crisis that's here, and certainly it makes it even more difficult for vulnerable residents due to disability in order to be able to navigate all of that. With the changing and shifting landscape, we need the resources in order to be able to be more hands-on with the experience of residents. And that's where these positions would be helping us to do it. So starting from the commissioner level, the county executive and panel, the Behavioral Health Task Force, and we were charged with intensely looking at our behavioral health system in the county for the focus of addressing gaps in services and trying to be able to identify what are the services that are missing or absent that would and have the ability to provide some support to our Ulster County residents. We spent months doing this. At times it was sort of dismal in terms of looking at what our needs are for our individuals, but we always came from a place of positivity in that the resources are out there. We have to get them here. We have to put in the resources in order to be able and commit those resources in order to be able to bring those resources here. So there's a huge body of work that's connected just with bringing the Behavioral Health Task Force plan from paper to fruition. It's bringing up anything from the Crisis Stabilization Center to I'm actually quite partial to the expansion of our partial hospitalization program, bringing in an intensive outpatient program within our county. So it all starts with first identifying partners to work with, helping them in terms of bringing up the development of the programs and then having the programs actually provide the service. All of that is a body of work that requires the leadership of someone who has the ability to, has not just the ability, but the time and the focus and capacity to be able to lead that process. So that's one of the things that adding the addition of a commissioner would allow for us to do. And then in terms of the full-time commissioner, it would trickle down to what the remaining staff are here and have the ability to take on more. There have been lots of discussions within the, I know the Ways and Means and also with the Public Health and Social Services Committee with regards to going beyond just the service provision, but how do we make the landscape of the behavioral health system healthier, not just today, but in the future. So that means for our providers to be able to contract with commercial insurances. You know, the ability for us to be able to advocate for better reimbursement rates on a statewide level. All of that requires time, attention, and advocacy for our state, for our, within our state, for our county, in which the full-time commissioner would be responsible for. So that is that one. I'm sorry, I'm just going down the list. And as I go through the list, if there's any questions, please stop me and I will answer the questions.
I don't have any questions. I understand the need for the positions. And I say again, I understand that they're all critical and vital positions. It's the question of how much resources do we, financial resources, are we going to have available to us? That's really all I'm stating with this. Let's say Walter, then Bartels.
Yeah, I'm going to also quickly summarize the last three because I think it ties into answering that question. Right now with the financial analyst, the complexity of the money that has to happen through the Office of Mental Health, both in the State Office of Mental Health, reimbursals, grants, it is so hugely complex, the finance aspect of mental health specifically, that having that robust system also assures that we're getting best reimbursal rates and we're getting actually being able to fulfill requirements of grants and get future grants. So I think that that has its financial support, that having a strong financial analyst supports that. The second position, again, and these didn't always come through, like the evaluated analyst, the amount of data that they have to process and store, not only for the county, but requests from nonprofit organizations who need this data, so that the grants that they're applying for, there's a tremendous amount of data asks from this department, data delivery, data storage, both in mental health and substance abuse, that the capacity to respond very quickly to data needs is financially useful. And the last one, it's called special projects, but this is the substance abuse focus. And while the other ones are the mental health, I mean, obviously they're interchanged, but to have that very focused sense of substance abuse, again, it also is, it's important because we want to keep our people out of the hospitals and not dying, but it's also very relevant in terms that this is a huge data stream, a financial stream of money from the state and the federal government. This is a department that can almost ultimately fund itself if it's run really well. And so, you know, I feel like it has not just social responsibility, but fiscal responsibility to make sure that this particular department is well supported.
Thank you, Leslie Bartels.
I'm good. You've covered it.
Sheriff Figueroa.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. I just wanted to echo some of the comments that the public safety chair, legislator Walters has stated in regards to the professional standards position. For a year and a half, actually more than that, because the first task force was put together by the county legislature in January of 2020, and then the executive order was passed for a separate commission that was done by the county executive. Reimagining police and the way we do business has to change, as simple as that. Right now, the person that is involved and that does my internal affairs, it's a collateral duty. Not only is he the second in command and urgent, he runs the detectives, he's the PIO, he's a hostage negotiator. In today's world of law enforcement, that cannot be tolerated. This is a serious time. People demand transparency. People want the law enforcement to make sure that if there's a complaint, that it's done quickly and it's done transparent. And having that professional standards supervisor is extremely important. He's not a person that's going to be in a union. He's probably going to be a civilian, and he will be responsible not only for complaints from the public, but internal affairs, for audits for all the divisions within the office, because we don't do that presently. Our rules and regulations and policies, our background investigations, our retention and recruitment. And this is a huge job. And this is something that we have been behind on here in this office for years. And that's also going to include equal employment opportunity compliance. It's also going to cover discrimination. It's also going to cover officer wellness. The money that we're going to save in the long run by putting this position is I'm telling you, the importance is that we need to act now, and this position needs to be created. And that's what the people demanded for the last year and a half and 9 months that this position be created, and I stand by my word that it needs to be created. Thank you.
Thank you, Legislator Walter.
Thanks. I just want to make also a quick clarification, and I don't want to, you know, assume anyone understands or doesn't understand this, but I just want to explain the importance of this being a non-union person. Nationally, the one thing that has been found to be the problem with appropriately responding to bad behavior by law enforcement is that the person or people who are examining those complaints are part of the same police union that the complainant is. And as a result, those complaints often get squashed, ignored, or belittled. So the fact that we are going to have a non-union person be responsible for hearing these complaints and responding to them is actually way more significant than you might recognize, and very cutting edge in this country, because that was considered one of the number one reasons for the failure to respond appropriately when these complaints happen. And I'll say the last thing, most officers who have done heinous things, like badly hurt people or killed them, typically had a series of complaints against them beforehand that were not dealt with. And so we, as a county, can be different. And so I'm really looking forward to this position.
Thank you. Don?
I just want to take a second to explain our positions too, why we're here. The county currently has 54.5 trail miles, and I know there's a little bit of a sentiment going around that trail maintenance doesn't occur during the winter, and I just want to explain to you guys that it most certainly does. We have fallen trees all the time during winter, and we have an Ashokan Rail Trail agreement that requires us to clear those trees when we get calls for them. In addition to those two positions on the building side, they will also be working on the floating crew. And as you notice, we've been coming to you more and more because of the last 2 years of COVID, we've had deferred maintenance on buildings and ground side, and it is very much catching up to us. And a combination of that and the retirement incentive has a lot of our skilled labor has retired. So these two positions, in addition to trail maintenance, will be put on the floating crew to help us maintain our buildings and infrastructure going forward. Brendan can, I'm sure, explain the highway position that's listed in this one as well. He was very much in the middle of the creation behind that one.
Sure. So if I may, the highway maintenance specialist that I'm asking for is to create something that's never been done here before, and that's a formalized training program. With the attrition of staff, we have a lot of semi-skilled and inexperienced people that we're requiring to operate equipment. There's concerns with applicability and appropriateness in having these guys operate this equipment without having proper training. So I would like to establish this line to have an individual that's dedicated to developing a training program with me.
Hey, you want to say, Archer?
Thank you. A couple of questions that I have. The whole effort here is to be able to surface where we have some questions and concerns. And so I appreciate your attendance here so we can get to the bottom of some of these. With regards to the building and grounds, I read your little synopsis as to the criticality of these positions. I'm just trying, I mean, to me, it sounds like a nice to have. When you talk about what kind of deferred maintenance has been done or hasn't been done, how many people do you have in buildings and grounds doing this work currently? And as it pertains to trails, we have a lot of volunteers that are cleaning trails, going, removing trees from the pathways, et cetera. So I'm a little confused now. We're out there doing trail work. And if I recall the original comments when the trails were going in is that the volunteers were really going to be, and the towns that the trails run through would be maintaining them. So help me to understand why now we're putting a crew together. And again, what I will say just as a whole, we're adding 62 jobs back into the system. We just spent a year pulling back and reassessing. And what I'm not hearing, which is a little disappointing, is what are we doing to leverage technology and helping us to navigate some of these concerns? And in no place did we have anything that gives us any understanding on the incremental value, dollar-wise, people wise that, you know, we know what people are going in, but what are we going to save as a result? What is the return on this investment? We keep adding people, it gets very costly. So, John, thank you.
If I may, there are certainly subsegments of trails that we have agreements with towns or organizations for them to pick up litter and other small items, but they don't do a full maintenance of the trails top to bottom. If a large tree falls, that is something that one of our crew with a chainsaw needs to go out and address. On the Ashokan Rail Trail Agreement, they are very particular in how the trail is to be maintained. In terms of your question regarding staffing levels, this is getting us back a little bit to what pre-COVID levels were. And in terms of the deferred maintenance, to Commissioner Golnick's point, the last couple of years, we did cut back our budget and our staffing to accommodate for the COVID. And because of that, that's where our deferred maintenance has come into play.
Can you give me some examples when you talk about deferred maintenance? What's the responsibility of these folks?
Of these two in particular?
Well, what are they going to be working on? What light maintenance, cleaning?
I don't want to confuse the two with the other one. So the two building trades workers will be on floating crews. They'll be sent on as needed projects as certain things break down to alleviate other staff who are more skilled to work on problems that come up. It's hard to give particular examples on these. I apologize because I can't really tell you what's going to break down halfway through the year.
Thank you. And let me just stop for a second and say that I have a work issue I'm dealing with as well. So I might have to jump off. Deputy Chair Ronk is prepared to take over if need be. So if I do jump off, that's the reason why. Alan, you're next, and then Tim.
Thank you, Chairman and legislators. First of all, can you hear me? Okay, great. Over the past several years, there's been a public demand globally around data and tailored customer focused services, web-enabled services, mobile services, et cetera. That has increased significantly over the last couple of years, and that trend will likely just continue upward. The trend also combined with various things like cybersecurity risks and increased cybersecurity risks, and we see them every day on our firewalls and our email systems, and the additional responsibilities that our team has to shoulder as a result of that, a result of both the emerging technologies and some of the cybersecurity risks that we continually experience on a daily basis, is creating an opportunity for us to really kind of shore up our capability. We took some impacts with COVID-19, and as a result, we're single-threaded in a lot of cases. Our ability to support our core infrastructure, our servers, our switches, firewalls, et cetera, we're one deep in that. Our application development team was hit pretty hard with COVID-related retirements. We're also very one deep in many circumstances, and the opportunity is really to create sort of resiliency in our organization, specifically as these trends, as I've mentioned, kind of increase, the demands on our department's going to increase. We need the ability to kind of scale in a sane way, especially when we have folks who are taking time off or vacations, et cetera. If any one of those single deep roles goes on vacation, we're really at a risk. And so these two roles that we have we're requesting a system specialist, it's got an infrastructure level role, managing our servers, switches, firewalls, Active Directory, our Office 365, et cetera. Also supporting some of our cybersecurity initiatives that we plan for 2022. Like for instance, creating greater network segmentation between sort of key systems in the county, which is really kind of an expectation that we're seeing from and recommendations from like the Department of Homeland Security and the elections infrastructures, state boards of elections. These are critical projects that we have on tap for 2022. We need assistance with that to kind of scale and bring in the right expertise to support those efforts. And the application support and development specialists is really as our enterprise systems move towards more traditional kind of IT or legacy IT environments to more web-based ERP systems, And as we move towards, as well as we move towards sort of cloud-based applications, software as a service, we need the right kinds of skills to support those types of environments. And those two roles really help bolster what we've lost during our COVID retirements and kind of get us at a baseline level that will help to ensure us resiliency, cybersecurity capabilities, and our ability to kind of just keep at a sane operating tempo.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I echo some of what my colleagues would share, and I think to emphasize Commissioner Gulnick's point, I have a small department that's only 2 years old of four people, and I know that the budget of the county is always under tremendous pressure, and there's lots of needs. Even in a time of unprecedented need on the parts of our communities, it's with great caution and care that I approached the budgeting process this year and found that it would be tremendously beneficial to our department and to the constituents that we serve, the businesses of Ulster County, to add an additional position. And so that's reflected in our budget request this year. What's requested is another business services administrator. I'll just, kind of paint a quick picture of the demands that our department is under and why this position is really a critical hire for us. There are nearly 5,000 businesses in Ulster County. We have a team of four people. So not that we serve every business, but we would love to be able to serve a greater portion of those businesses, especially at a time when they are experiencing tremendous change and many of them tremendous stress. As an indicator of the demand out there, we, as you know, recently launched our Ulster County Cares Small Business Assistance Program. We've seen tremendous response with over 250 pre-applications submitted. We have nearly 50 full applications that have been submitted. We are going to quickly exhaust those funds, but would like to be able to access other state and federal programs that would allow us to continue to support, especially our small and disadvantaged businesses. In order to do that, we really need more staff resources in our department. And so that's what this position is designed to do. I think, we all are probably, plenty familiar with the American Rescue Plan and the funds that came to the county as a result of that federal legislation, but we should all recall that there were many billions more in programs through the federal and state level that we will expect to see trickling down to our local businesses in the coming years. This position would enable us to continue to pursue those both on behalf of the county and behalf of our business community to make sure that those businesses in our communities are able to best leverage those resources from the federal and state government. So that's the purpose of this position being requested.
Thank you. Legislator Bartels, then Walter.
Thanks. So I'm just wondering, and I'm pretty sure that don't we have an agreement in terms of the Ashokan Rail Trail with the city that provides for the funding for the maintenance of the trail? I mean, I feel like I've had this conversation before during budget time. It was always explained that the agreement, we were undertaking the maintenance with the knowledge that it was a win-win for us. We were actually going to make some money on it, but now we're putting in two positions with that explanation. So can someone just explain?
I think you're confusing that with a snow maintenance agreement.
Is it strictly a snow maintenance agreement?
We have an agreement with New York City for the plowing services around the Ashokan Rail Trail, to which they reimburse us for us plowing their roads.
Okay. So it's just that. It's not the trail.
Not the trails itself.
Okay.
Yes, they want.
Thanks. The takes money to make money. I guess I wonder, Tim, you bring up this point that there are all these potential opportunities for funding for businesses and for the county related to businesses. To me, this feels like the perfect opportunity then to use ARP money for a position like this. We have to leverage the funding we have. And if I recognize it would only cover a couple of years, but if the argument is using the ARP money gets somebody in here who could then in turn be bringing in more funding and in those funding requests, you include sort of overhead that would help support this position, but like, this seems like an ideal situation to fund this position through ARP instead. And it's totally aligned with the ARP objectives of responding to businesses who have been struggling during COVID, and then expect that that person during the 2 years really earn their keep and find ways of bringing in more money into the county that helps support the continuation of the position. But I feel like we don't always find these opportunities of taking the ARP money and using it in a way that will actually put us in a better place in 3 years, not just use it to then be done with it, but use it so that we can have this head start we need so that in 3 years from now, we're doing really well. And I just think this would be an ideal opportunity for something like that.
Thank you. Chris?
So with regards to using the ARP for an additional position, part of what we envision for the three that are being onboarded in the next 2 weeks is to look for other funding sources. Some of the expertise that we're bringing on board have some expertise in transportation planning and infrastructure, access to those funds, as well as housing. So that is part of the overall vision, is not just leveraging the $34 million that we received, but it's also seeking other sources to build a stronger foundation. So I think that is being addressed with the positions. The second part of that is, in the discussions that we had with you all in the legislature, it was important to you, and I think it was very important to us, that every possible dollar could go out the door to the projects that we're proposing. So that's why the three positions that proposed are less than 5% of the overall receipt of the $34 million. So we are still of that mindset that as much as possible, and we do recognize and we do take the point, but as much as possible, we'd like that money to go out the door.
And let's say, Walter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think 71,417 is going to change your 5%. And so, and this is the only situation that I'm noticing it and bringing it up. But I think specifically everything that Tim just said about how this person can leverage other funding just seems like this is one of those examples. I'm not suggesting it necessarily for trails. I'm just saying, although that could be another one. But I'm saying very specifically related to what Tim said, this would be an ideal situation in this case, and it would not change our 5%, not this one position. So just to consider it.
Listen, Archer.
Yeah, and I think it expands beyond this position. And by way of example, what we discussed yesterday as it relates to the Navigation Center, we still have it in place. We're still in the midst of COVID. What can we learn from this? I still, by the way, Chris, haven't seen the data. But again, to try and look at how we're justifying adding these positions, I think it's really important. If you want the support for this, I think you need to help lay out, you know, what you're seeing that is going to help us understand why these positions are important. But again, that whole unit could be a ARPA, and what we learn from that can build to a different front end for the county down the road. But as I said, we're still in COVID, and so it's still relevant. Why not use the money for that and continue on in that realm with the Navigation Center? So that's another example of where you can use ARPA money before we're hiring full-time, putting a whole unit together, and we haven't even seen anything that says, yeah, this, we want to move in this direction, we think this is the right thing, but here's what our experience has been and why we want to do that, which we don't have today.
Chris?
Yeah, Legislator Archer, you made the request of me yesterday. We received these amendments at 6:30 last night. I will do my best to turn it around by tomorrow, early Friday morning, in terms of the Customer Service Navigator program. I'm just going through some of the statistics. I do have it. It's just short timelines here.
No, I appreciate it, but it was requested last week. So just FYI, that's where I'm coming from.
Oh, okay.
Chris, you have more? No. All right. Anything else?
Let's say, Gavaris, just wanted to reiterate all of these positions. We do have the revenues to support that. We did not raise taxes. We held them flat. And I just, you know, wanted to reiterate, when we do the budget process, we review each position requested. And I will say our bond ratings and our fiscal ratings show that we do a good job when it comes to budgeting.
Thank you. All right, Legislator Walter, you're up next.
Thank you. So this, whether it was a sort of a communication confusion or what in our ARP mental health group, but what my concern was is in our capital plan, the Crisis Stabilization Center wasn't separated out from the concept of having a mental health hub. And I was worried about that because one, the Crisis Stabilization Center is of high priority. Two, it might fit in a mental health hub, but it might not. You know, we may, it needs to stand on its own whether or not we do a mental health hub. Separate on its own parallel, its own path as a mental health hub is explored. And so I think it was a miscommunication. I thought it was clear that this should be standing alone as its own project with ARP funding. Our resolution that we all approved specified that it was there for ARP funding. And so it's just cleaning it out. It doesn't change the capital plan for mental health that's currently in our system. It just separates out and cleanly expresses the Crisis Stabilization Center so that it can just continue on its own with or without. It's perfectly fine if the two all happen together, but in case they don't, it just needs to have its own line.
Thank you. Questions? All right, Respite House.
Yeah, so I brought this up when we went through the capital plan with the Ways and Means, the combined group. And the Respite Houses were missing from this year's capital plan. We did approve a resolution for the Respite Houses for this year. I think that this absolutely could fall under ARP funding as well as the Crisis Stabilization Center. And I've spoken to Chris. We are going to regroup on our ARP team to discuss the feasibility of including this for that. In the meantime, it'll now sit under as a county cost, but this is a very vital element to our county. This was actually completely unanimously approved, the respite houses. These are providing 7 to 10 day beds, and with state legislation changes, these can provide up to 30 day beds one day soon, which is what I'm hoping for. So I just want to make sure that they are reflected in our capital plan as well. I think it needs to happen kind of parallelly to the Crisis Stabilization Center because the two really can work well together. So I just wanted to make sure it was in there. I made it clear again at our dual meeting that I felt it was missing. And so I'm just putting it back in there to our capital plan.
Ms. Faber tells.
Thank you. Can I just ask for clarification? Does that mean that in your first meeting, the respite houses weren't a part of the ARPA funds in the mental health group?
I'm not quite sure how that happened. I've been noticing, to be honest, and I don't know why, that from the very beginning, when it was sort of publication from the executive's office or other things, respite houses kept being left out. And I kept feeling like I was saying, well, what about the respite houses? What about the respite houses? In the defense of the ARPA committee, we had a very short amount of time to talk about things. I'm sure I brought it up, but I can't really recall whether we ever specifically said yes to it being ARPA or not. And so I'm respecting the fact, especially because for some reason it wasn't listed in the resolution that way anyway. It was for the Crisis Stabilization. So I'm going to just respect the process. I think it's absolutely ARPA, but because our process set aside that anything that's ARPA, the committee would absolutely, sort of vote and agree that, we'll bring back our subcommittee just to do that process. So I have very little doubt, I'm hoping, that I'm right. that everyone in the ARPA group for mental health would be completely fine because it's a perfectly suited, it's just out of respect to the process.
So if I can just,
yeah,
I mean, I'm hopeful that, and I'm expecting, I see that Chris has his hand up as well. And I'm hoping that most of these groups are going to be meeting again soon. It's just, I'm assuming it's that we're in the middle of budget. So this has taken a kind of precedence, which makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm definitely supportive of the respite houses being a part of ARPA. And I'm looking forward to all of these groups regrouping to have, you know, expanded conversations, because I know that there were other initiatives that came out of the legislature that weren't a part of initial conversations in individual groups. And I know that the executive's office is open to that discussion as well. So maybe Chris will speak to this as well, but I'm just assuming that the budget process kind of inserted itself in the middle of that one due to timing.
Chris?
Yes, you are 100% right. Budget process. And to Eve's points earlier, I we really look forward to continuing what I think has been a really productive conversation with regard to mental health services. So I just want to say that we had very good conversations and look forward to continuing those. And then I'm thinking, just for context, it's November 17th. The budget should be finalized within the first week. I'm hoping to pull together some meetings so I can also introduce everybody to the new staff within those first few weeks of December. So that's kind of the timeline we're working on right now.
Thank you.
Any discussion? Share personnel.
Thank you. So this was a compression issue. There are three positions, managerial positions in the sheriff's office, the undersheriff, superintendent, and a civil administrator. In each of these cases, it's the situation, well, at least for two of them specifically who have people under them, that the individuals who are beneath them are already at salaries higher than theirs. And the challenge with this is, well, there are several things. I mean, just the very nature that they are the supervisors and they are getting paid less, including the fact that because of our system, they don't get overtime. But also then that will create a problem with moving people into it should that individual leave, because they'd have to take a pay cut. So what I did is I examined not only the salaries of those beneath it, but the salaries of the same people in other counties. And I know different legislators feel different about it. So I'll say that, I looked for a happy medium. I by no means, they're not even close to the salaries in other counties in the raise that I've suggested. It's a minimal increase to just put them at a level slightly above those below them. But they're not even close to what the other counties are making. I'll just say that they're within $10,000 to $20,000, still less than the other counties, but I'm not going to be ridiculous and try to actually propose $20,000, $30,000 raises right now. So I tried to find that middle ground. To balance it, and with the support of the sheriff, he had a new hire on there of a deputy that we took out the new hire so that we could help support these existing staff members. In addition, helping, which more than offsets the cost, by the way, of these relatively small raises. But in addition, to make further cuts, removing the mental health person, they're in the Department of Mental Health, but it's to support AVERT. And the reason I'm doing it is because, one, mental health is already providing somebody to help support AVERT, but also I feel a little duplicitous services, because right now we have a mental health person who is going to focus on the courts, which the whole description is to provide that link between mental health and criminal justice. So that's kind of dealing with the same kind of thing, and that person can absolutely work with AVERT. And the public defender, using her Al Herring money, also has a mental health person to work in the courts. So I really strongly believe that with the public health, the public defender's mental health person who will work in the courts, the court person in Department of Mental Health, that we don't need a third mental health person working with, you know, in this area. So for now, I'm taking that one out, taking out one deputy sheriff, just so that we can provide a little bit more of an increase to those three positions. And again, it's a serious compression problem. And again, it's not even close to what they really probably, if we were to re-envision it, what they really should be at. The last thing I'll say is for the civil attorney, basically this person is an in-house attorney for the sheriff's, which is vital for a lot of things that are going, that happen out of the sheriff's office. And not a lot of counties have an internal attorney. So it actually saves us a lot of money having this person, and efficiency, because you don't have, it's someone who's, you know, in the sheriff's office. But this person is also leads our urgent task force. And so originally that person had a base salary and a stipend for urgent. So this is going to be a little complicated, but I want you all to understand what I did with my math. So they had the civic attorney salary, which was exceedingly low compared to what other attorneys make. They had a stipend, and then last year payroll combined the two into one salary. From all the research I do, that one salary is kind of close to what the attorney should be making just for the attorney jobs. And I also compare it to what's happening in the DA's office and everything else. So what I'm proposing is to just leave that and bring back the urgent stipend. And the reason why that's also useful is I rather keep them separate, because if he was to resign tomorrow, you know, they may not have whoever they hire as the attorney also be the urgent task force leader. So the two should remain separate so that they could be, you know, recognized separately. So that's what happened with that. And I know that's a little complicated, so please feel free to ask questions.
Okay, Legislative Bartels, but just for a quick second, I have to leave for a few minutes. Legislative Ronk has to leave at 3. Legislative Archer, if nobody has objections, would you be willing to chair in the absence of both the chair and the deputy chair? All right, does anybody have any objections to Legislative Archer chairing in the absence? Okay, so I'm going to jump off right now. I apologize if Legislative Ronk wants to jump in while he can. I appreciate it. Great. Legislator Arts, why don't you take over then?
Okay. Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. Thank you for the explanation regarding that third position and the stipend. I'm just wondering, maybe this is for Natalie or Amber, can we get the rest of that position's explanation, because it was hard for me to track that one position. Because I was just looking, I was going to ask you, like, what is the eight? Why is it only 0 to 8,000? But I just went in the book in a physical copy and couldn't track it down. So if I could just see the whole of that position, not a minute, but later, if someone could send that to me.
The 8,000 is a stipend, so that's not connected to a specific position number or to a specific person. It's as those duties for the task.
Is right. So what I'm interested in seeing is that specific person's information, mm-hmm. not the name, but the listing and the detail on that on that line. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, you want to move ahead, Legislator Walter? Sure.
So right now the Human Rights Commission has one half-time person. We approved a resolution, but the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force and the legislature approved a resolution for a helpline, which for individuals who are experiencing discrimination in the criminal justice system, have some place that they can call. So we had originally considered the fact that it should be a half-time person who supports this helpline. However, in my conversation with the Commissioner of Human Rights, you know, the amount of burden that this office is already getting without even us publicizing a helpline is pretty high. It's a lot for right now. The commissioner just has one halftime person assisting him. And so the concern was that simply adding another halftime person it's not enough for how much work that this department does, because not only they're not just responding to this helpline, they are supporting people, they are referring them, they are sometimes holding their hands. And then if the call is a human rights violation, truly investigating it. So it's quite a big task to have just two halftime people supporting him. So for ease and efficiency, just making this second position a full-time, rather than taking the existing position that's halftime and making it full-time, since this is a new position anyway, making it full-time so that in essence, the Human Rights Commission has 1.5 administrative assistants or 1.5 support staff, as opposed to just 2 halves, to meet its current needs as well as the upcoming, you know, added impact from having a highly publicized helpline.
Okay, any questions on this? Clarifications? Chair Figueroa?
Good afternoon again. I just wanted to see if Legislator Bartels wanted me to explain the role of the Chief Civil Administrator, and if so, I can. The other point that I was looking at, the amendments in regards to the security guard, the full-time security guard position, and the importance of that. We presently have members throughout the county. And if you go into the county building, you'll see different people all the time. I have approximately 3 that are on FMRA. Another one just went out today, and I don't know how long they're going to be out. We all the issues that we've been having locally in regards to securities of the buildings and the times that we're in, it's extremely important to have that full-time position. And the reason is because of the issues that we've been having in regards to issues at the courts, issues at the county building when there are protests, and the issues at the Department of Motor Vehicles, the Department of Social Services. We also have a member up at the health department at Golden Hill, out in Ellenville, and we're just shorthanded with the folks that are out on FMLA. We're in the middle of a pandemic. And again, those are specific restrictions for coming in and out of buildings. And that's why I'm requesting the additional security guard.
Legislator Bartels.
I'm okay actually without the explanation, Sheriff. I mean, I think I have an understanding. What I really wanted to see, while I totally trust Legislator Walter, is the amendment doesn't include the salary, so I have no sense of the compression because I only see the $8,000 stipend. So I don't even know how much that person is making.
That's Legislator Walter.
You know, I have the backup of salary comparisons, and I played back and forth on adding all that backup. So I'll put together backup for all 3 just so everyone has it with them. I admit it was one of those things in my mind saying I need to add this, but I was working so much with Amber back and forth on it that asking her to add one more thing, I was intimidated. So I will organize that in the next
Thank
day.
You.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and like I say, I mean, I trust you. It's just that one position was an outlier because it
and
just
I have it. Typing, I have it. There's no reason why. I just honestly was scared to tell Amber I wanted something else.
Please don't feel that way.
Out of total respect.
We recognize what the last couple of weeks have been. So I think that's what Legislative Walter is referring to. So thank you for all your hard work. Okay, I think that was it for you now. Now it's mine. This is the capital plan for Enterprise West. Chairman is back.
Thank you.
We're on my amendment for Enterprise West at this juncture. We've had a lot of conversations about this. I know that there's some money that's being discussed, ARP money for Enterprise West as it relates to the capital plan. I just feel strongly that our message is no more money here and the best course of action other than what we already had committed to, which is the work on the survey, the legal fees, and the appraisal, that it stops here.
Tim?
So just to clarify, it appears that the amendment would eliminate funding that was previously approved in a capital project in late 2020 that has yet to be fully expended, that was for improvements to the building to prepare it for minimum occupancy standards. I just want clarification if that's the intent.
Yeah, I believe, Amber, if you can respond to this, we've already, anything that's already been encumbered is, you know, we're not removing any of that. As I said, even for the resolution we just approved, but it's any more money, any future money, no.
Well,
that's what we're... So if you have a question, if we captured everything correctly, I think, Amber, you have a backup sheet that supports all this. Would you mind sharing it with Tim so that he can get comfortable that we've captured everything?
Yes. And then, of course, anything that needs to go into the system is included in as like a technical correction before, you know, at the budget vote or all those adjustments are made.
So if I might just in further response, you know, I think it's maybe become clear in some of our past conversations that there's been some delays in some of that initially approved capital work as we completed the transfer of the properties to USITA, which then requires a bondable interest for that work to be completed. We've been working with DPW and the county attorney's office to prepare the right structure to enable the completion of that work, and it may have held up some encumbrances. So we'll work with DPW and Amber get with you to just clarify what things are already committed and underway. But, you know, so that helps, and I appreciate that explanation. You know, I think I would just remind everyone that this is an intent to assist with the redevelopment of this important part of the overall Tech City campus on the west side. The idea here was to have some capital investment that was initially funded through the county legislature, and that we would seek additional sources for the remaining funds that are comprised this $2.9 million capital project. I guess I'm maybe asking for further clarification, Legislator Archer. This would remove and eliminate this capital project, which would mean that we are basically no longer carrying this as a part of our overall capital plan for the next few years. I maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, Bert or Chris, but you know, I think the intent to leverage other funds to come up with the capital to do this work would therefore really be eliminated from the capital project. And I would object to that because I think that there is important work that we need to do on this building, even if it's not from county taxpayer funded sources.
That would be accurate, though.
Then I think you need to be clear, because I thought we were all very clear that we had this whole thing has evolved over the last several months, even to bring more clarity to the fact that, you know, this is not something, this is not a long-term building. We need to move away from that. You are already putting ARP money towards this building as well. I think we need to be very definitive as to what is ARP eligible and what do you really need from here? Because we've had too many sets of numbers with commitments that have evolved and changed. And I recognize it's not an easy, situation, but I think we've all been pretty clear in the legislature. We don't want to own this building. It needs to move. And every time we put money towards this building, and towards rentals and all of that, we become a landlord all over again. And that's really what we're all trying to avoid.
Yeah, I understand this is ground we've trod already. And I look forward, I think we're scheduled to have some further conversations, Lynn. I look forward to those. I just want to impress on everyone that As we've shared in, you know, in further detail in executive session, which I won't go into because of litigation, but there is exciting movement on this campus. I think what we are intending and have intended all along is that we remain involved in that movement and redevelopment of this signature economic asset in our community. And I think eager to talk that through with you, Lynn, and help you understand our perspective on it and listen more to yours. But I just want to, you know, be on record saying that I think that that's going to involve continued investments in some form. I understand and have been made fully aware of this body's reluctance to commit additional taxpayer money to this, but I just want to be on record that I think that there's a value in us continuing to be present on the campus and investing in the campus in some form, and that's what's intended with this capital project. But I'll talk with you further, and we can see what we can come to.
I look forward to the conversation.
Thank you. Buildings and grounds.
Yeah, and I think we kind of went over that earlier with Don. These are the positions that you left out in your review, Chairman, and we wanted to, I wasn't quite sure why they were left out, so I wanted to make sure that they were in there so we could have discussion on, you know, where we're going. And this is, we talked about this one already with Don. The positions... I'm sorry.
Do you mind? One is different than the other two. So this one isn't so much trails workers and floating crew. This is a light maintenance specialist. The idea behind this person is it's somebody who can clean and also do light maintenance, like changing light bulbs, putting up fixtures, things like that, so that somebody with a more skilled background can continue to work on HVAC and other equipment and not be tied up with some of the smaller things.
And you have no one doing that currently? Don?
We do, but we're just strapped for labor. It's this again with these three or four positions, I believe.
Three.
I'm sorry, three on buildings and grounds. We're still one less than what we were a couple of years ago.
So, did you have three leave last year? Did you have any leave last year?
We cut back during the COVID pandemic. I believe it was budget. I'm sorry, and please remind me, the budget department might need to fill me in. I think it was four positions total in buildings and grounds is what we gave up during the COVID pandemic. I'm sorry, it's a few budgets ago, so I'd have to go back and look. But from my knowledge—
You don't remember them, Don?
We got a lot of contracts over here.
Come on, I know you're on top of this.
These three get us back to pre-COVID with the exception of one electrician position that we left out. And for the record, we'd love to have that electrician too. It's just we can't offer rates to get one in. They cost a lot right now.
Okay. And then the highway positions.
I'll let Brendan explain those. He's very much in that field.
So a number of years ago, through vacancies, we lost one of our road maintenance leader positions, which we had in Kingston. During the winter months especially, we have a heavy-handed crew, but we don't have enough foreman to manage them. This will put that back. Regarding the welder position, we were down to one welder in the bridge crew, and you know we've been trying real hard to restaff that bridge crew, who's been doing a fantastic job, and there's a lot of steel work involved with that. Our senior welder there, he's 60 some years in age, and I'd like to get a younger welder on board as part of a succession plan. The final two lines, the two CO2s, we're a little backwards as far as MEOs versus CO2s and the numbers that we have. There's very little room for guys to move up over the years. Adding these two CO2 lines would help us provide more opportunity for these guys as far as moving up.
Chris?
Legislator Gravaris and to Legislator Archer, in terms of answering Don's question, in the 2020 adopted budget prior to the pandemic, buildings and grounds had 57 positions. In the 2022 budget, they have 54. They are still down three positions from 2020 prior to the pandemic.
Walter.
Yeah, so I guess what would be useful then is to understand what harm, and I'm not suggesting no harm came, but like what harm came of that? So, you know, it's not enough to replace positions because they existed. It's replacing because that might just have been the right thing to do. It might have been right sizing it. So I think it'd be very useful to understand, like, because we lack these three positions or lack these other positions, here's what couldn't happen, wouldn't happen, got worse, because again, it's just not enough to add positions because they were once here. So yeah, thanks.
Don? Again, I hate to be convoluted in an answer, and I'm sorry if I'm coming across that way. It's to answer your question, though, it's kind of the intangibles of what we can't say. Deferred maintenance is the short answer, but it's hard for us to say what got deferred in that time period. We had to pick and choose what type of maintenance we had to perform simply because staffing levels weren't what they used to be. If we had to, for example, it's, and I'm sorry, it may just be a silly example, would say a building needed carpet, you know, but it's something that we couldn't get to just because our guys were out because a boiler failed. And that takes a much higher priority. It becomes a manpower equation for us.
So Walter.
So first, I hope you mean person power, but.
Sorry, my apologies.
No problem. But I would say, you know, I think it just, it would be helpful, I think, if you can make some of those intangibles tangible. Because honestly, if we were able to go without that one carpet, that one forever many months, then maybe that was okay. You know, I mean, we are trying to be efficient. So I'm not suggesting that there aren't things that were really problematic because of those positions not being there. But I do feel like, you know, if you could put not this moment, but really, you know, let us have a clearer sense of what, you know, important things we lost or were not able to do, you know, I mean, there are things like delays in a bridge being built. Legislator Gavars is just talking about how hard it is to get from home to work because of a bridge. I could see, like, that can impact people's lives. And if that bridge was built faster, it would really make a difference. So I think it'd be very useful for a lot of these building grounds, trails, all of those to really understand on a little bit more tangible level how we were hurt or and our constituents by not having those positions, as opposed to just sort of tightening our belts a little bit, which I don't think is enough reason alone to hire more. So, and I'm sure you have them, just it'd be helpful to really hear what they are.
Sure, we can sit down and throw something together.
And I think it's more of, you know, it's a nice to have if we could meet everyone's needs or do things faster or make sure we provide and I think, Brendan, this is what you were referring to, a progression where people can add skills and move up in the organization. But at the end of the day, are we getting what we need from a county in the most efficient way, most cost efficient way? Or again, are these nice to haves? Or, you know, what don't we do as a result of not filling these positions?
Anybody else? Okay, thank you. Leslie Archer.
One of the things that I just started to take a look at, and I don't know, we have a number of management positions that have gone over the 3%, and I'm wondering if we all feel comfortable with that, or is that something we should take a little bit more time to get our arms around? We've had a couple of compression issues that were highlighted by Legislator Walter, but I'm looking at a report that I just, you know, got the other day, and I'm just trying to gauge where we're at. We're significantly above, and I know that Commissioner of Finance is convinced that we have a good revenue stream coming in. But once again, we're still in COVID. Numbers are starting to shift again. There's a lot of discussion both on the economy side and the COVID side that put a number of question marks into next year. And, you know, we have over the years talked about trying to do a salary study, get a better understanding of local market. Everybody wants to compare themselves, but, you know, the reality is it's, you know, we are in a local market. We should have a better handle on what pay raises should look like. And I just feel like every year we get a number of these significant increases in the management category and not throughout the organization. So I just started to look at it. So I'm just raising it as a question, Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions, Walter?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable to look at them on a case-by-case basis. I imagine some more of them might be related to compression or for other reasons. You know, I think it's due diligence to, you know, everyone else who, in a typical world, they get raised is it's based on performance, it's based on lots of things and not just done in a vacuum. And so, you know, I'm supportive of this idea of looking at them and talking about them with the expectation that many of them may be there for very good reasons, but there might be some that don't. But yes, I'm supportive of that examination. It's not a huge list, so I don't think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there Bartels?
I would just echo that. I'm supportive of that as well. I don't know if we want to take the time right now or once we finish. Was that the last amendment? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we want to take the time now to go through them, or if we want to do that as part of the next conversation. I don't know, but I'm open.
Just to confirm our schedule, is our next meeting scheduled for next Tuesday at 4 to review all the amendments again and then vote on them? Is that correct, Chairman? So I'm wondering, because again, I'm just having the opportunity to look at all of this. I don't know that I have enough thought behind questions. Maybe between now and then, we'll have an opportunity to look at this and then raise questions prior to our meeting. I don't know if that'll work for anyone. I'm just throwing it out there.
We do have tomorrow as a scheduled day. Amber, do we have agenda for that, items for that yet or not?
I don't have any agenda items for tomorrow.
And then after that, Tuesday is the next scheduled meeting, correct? Or is Monday? I forget.
Tuesday the 23rd at 4 p.m.
Okay. I mean, I know Legislator Ronk had some discussion he'd like to have on one of these. Do you think you'd be ready by tomorrow, Legislator Archer?
The problem is tomorrow is my personal thing. So I could do Friday. So if that works for folks to, you know, carve out an hour or two on Friday just to go over all this, see if there's any questions we all have and try to finalize that, I can make my schedule work. I don't know what everyone else's looks like.
Legislator Walter?
I'll just say, I'm just looking at it. In terms of raises above 3%, we're talking 35 people, just so that you have it in your, you know, a sense of what we're talking about.
Legislator, weekend be better to have and do the try to schedule this for Monday? I don't know.
Whatever works for everyone. I mean, I will try and work. Natalie?
Amber's checking with Jay about noticing laws.
Oh, okay. If you want to go ahead and do it tomorrow, I will try and carve out what my questions are and try to get it to you, but I won't be here tomorrow.
Let's say your part house and then Haynes.
I'm definitely going to be here for a few days, so I'm available. But what I would suggest is, in terms of the non-union raises above 3%, while we have a little more time, we might consider taking the time right now with those departments that are present to have the discussion. We have finance here. I don't know if there's, I'm trying to look down it. That may actually be the only one that's, oh, and information services is here. And we could talk to those two departments about the, because I think in terms of talking about the increases, we're going to need department heads present to explain it. Otherwise, we're just talking to each other.
There's also a sheriff one.
Oh, and there's a sheriff one, yeah.
All right, Chris?
I think it would be more fair to us on our team if we had the list. I think this is less than short notice. This is no notice to discuss this topic. So if we could be provided the list in time to analyze it so we can properly respond, I'd respectfully ask that of the committee.
Ashley Bartels?
Well, I think we could definitely get you the list, but you created the list, essentially. I mean, it's the budget that was created by the finance office. So within your division, you know where there are raises, respectfully, that are over 3%.
Sure, it's a $350 million budget with a lot of lines, and I think it would be nice if we had the time to analyze this ourselves and take a look at the PLs.
I'm fine. If you want to wait, I'm fine with not discussing it for your department today. Whatever is the committee's.
We would say for the whole list, if this is going to be a review of all management raises above 3%, we would like to go back to our notes and see where, if it's compression, if it was something else. That's not something that just flies off the top of our head.
Do we have an answer on the meeting requirement notice?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Hello. It's 72 hours.
Okay.
So you'd be very tight for Friday.
Well, what about Monday?
Monday I'm good with.
Okay. All right. Do you need a motion for that, or can I just, as chair, call the meeting and you notice it?
Can you? What time are you thinking? If my request is that it's after 4.
Okay, I can do anytime after 3, so 4 p.m. works for me. Legislator Haynes, I'm sorry, Legislator, you had your hand up before. I apologize, I forgot.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to make note that I am unavailable Friday or Monday.
Okay. All right, and we can continue that conversation, too, if need be, on Tuesday at the meeting. Add that to the agenda as well as a spillover. Okay. Is everybody okay with 4 o'clock then on Monday? Otherwise, all right. Let's please notice that. Let's see if Bartels.
Does that mean we're not having a meeting tomorrow? Just confirming.
Yeah, I don't see a reason to, quite honestly. I guess. No, I'm good. All right, so nothing else with that. Then the non-county contracts, we had come up with a different process where we're supposed to be prioritizing and coming up with legislative initiatives and sort of, you know, coming up with concepts. Nobody submitted anything. None of the other committees have followed that. So we really need to move that direction. Legislator Walter?
So I thought that my understanding was that the form was created, that the real challenge primary was that it said that it complied with the mission of the legislature and that we did not have an actual mission or strategic objective. So, I mean, just to be clear of what the ask is and who should be actually doing this, we're asking legislators independently as committees or what to identify and what the, again, mission, objectives, and key priorities. And then I guess my secondary question, and I know I don't know if anyone's here from legislative programs who where this originated, although Amber was a part of the conversation, is whether it's supposed to be in alignment with the legislative mission or alignment with the mission of legislative programs, because they're slightly different. You know, I could see the legislature to, you know, enhance efficiency and efficacy of services, you know, as a very broad thing, while legislative programs has a kind of the mission of filling gaps and leveraging enhancements and needed services. So, you know, the second question, the second part of the first part is what is our ask? And the second part is, should we really be trying to find the mission of the legislature as opposed to the mission of the legislative programs specifically? And I don't know if anyone here can answer that question, because I don't think anyone here is actually on that committee.
Yeah, I don't think we have anybody from the committee.
But I'll say for me, that's why I haven't done anything. It's because I don't know what we're supposed to have been doing. I mean, I could tell you what I think the mission should be of legislative programs, but or objectives of legislative programs. But, you know, I think it's such a big, broad ask that I'm not surprised no one did anything. I'm also very worried because we do need this. The metrics were well thought out, and we do want some real metrics for legislative programs to actually do what they've got to do. So I don't think we should delay. I don't know what Ways and Means role is in this exactly and what it should be, but we should definitely, as a body at least, we need something in place so that legislative programs has parameters to assess potential programs.
Yeah. Let me just ask a question of Amber first. If we were to ask a legislative programs to attend Monday's meeting, would that be pushing it too far out to be able to have this discussion or not?
To ask for a joint committee meeting?
Yeah.
Of legislative programs? So I think the movement of the policy changes was to redirect this to be funding for the legislature and not the legislative programs, education, community services committee specifically. So it does also involve all of the other committees, which is why the memorandum went out to all of the committee chairs and asked for feedback from all of the committees. I don't know if you would want to only take the consideration of the legislative programs committee, or maybe inviting Legislator Criswell and Legislator DeLon, who have been like advocating for this changes in the policy and working so hard on the matrix and the application.
Okay, Legislator Bartels.
Thanks. I definitely think we should speak to legislators Criswell and DeLon on the work that they've done. But I'm wondering, so first of all, so where are we at? I mean, right now it's just a line. It's been moved to just one line item in the legislature. Have they come with a proposal for the distribution?
The due date per the policy is January 31st. Cornell Cooperative, the libraries, and Soil and Water have submitted requests for funding.
But that's for January 31st. So are we saying that we're going to go into this budget without committing funds to those three agencies in terms of real numbers?
So we don't have to commit funds to them in that manner because all of these accounts are under the legislative authorization. So all of those budget account, the monies can be moved at the time that the contracts are approved. And those three agencies are under different enabling legislation. So they're just kind of different in general.
Moment. Okay. I feel like this is something we really need to work out. And this is something that I spoke about at the time, just in terms of the concern, particularly about those three agencies and the confidence, like going into a budget cycle without the confidence that those three agencies are funded at reasonable levels. you know, I don't know. I don't want to put the cart before the horse. We should probably have legislators DeLon and Criswell here, but I think it's probably pretty critical that we have this conversation soon, because this is a very big difference than previous approaches.
Did I say Walter?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not looking to kick the bucket by any means, but I think asking every chair of every committee to somehow come up with the mission and strategic goals is the kind of ask that of course led to nothing happening. So it didn't work. I think that I would request that legislative programs where this sits actually proposes what they think the mission and strategic goals are that should guide it. And then we could give feedback on it. But I don't think it obviously isn't going to happen by just asking all of us. Like, I don't even see how I'm having that conversation in law enforcement exactly. It's just, so I feel like I'd rather see what they have to say. I'd also say the second issue that came up, one is how do we pick which programs? But the other was, how do we make sure that programs all over the county who might be eligible know that they are? And so I think that's also a second question. But I feel like this is work that committee should do and bring to us. I think that, you know, the work that we do, that we, in ways and means that we bring to them, I think this is work I would rather see them do and bring to us. And then we could give feedback.
Yeah, as a member, a former member of that committee, I think what their struggle might be, and again, like Trace said, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but they've already revised their plan, and then there were members of the body who were not happy with that revision, and it must be that they're just looking for, feedback from other colleagues to try to help, you know, make up a new matrix here. But I do agree with Legislator Walters that it kind of really has to be done within that committee, or at least be having communications. I think we've struggled for I know personally myself, I've struggled for a while with how some of these programs were funded. And I think that the bigger struggle is finding the right matrix for it. And I agree with Tracy, like, I'm a little bit nervous too, regarding, you know, some of these programs moving into the budget without them figuring out how we're going to fund those. Yeah, I can tell you that speaking of those three programs in particularly, Soil and Water, Cornell Cooperative, and libraries, they need to have lines in this budget. It's for me, it's really that simple. It's also a show of confidence. It's about our relationship with each of the programs. I've long struggled with this in terms of wanting to see many of the other legislative programs find their way into the executive's budget where appropriate, and have advocated for that along the line. I'm hoping that we can make this work, but it worries me when it's presented as a kind of a grants program which we're not allowed to give grants, that has some kind of competitive edge. These are contracts for services. And they got established initially because they were contracts for services, and this is historically, that the executive's office many years ago, refused to put into the budget, probably for good reasons, making difficult decisions. And the legislature saw fit to say, no, we want to make sure we fund these. But then over time, they became legacy funding. And now here we are. So, I mean, we're getting really close to approving a budget. So we definitely need to know for sure about those lines. I don't love the idea of them being, you know, in a big line in the legislature for things like soil and water and libraries and the Cornell Cooperative.
And to that point, I will say that, my impression of this was that we would get, and this is something Legislative Bartels, you've been saying for the last 2 years that I've been here, is that things that are in legislative budget really should just be in the budget itself. It should be something that we're doing not as part of legislative programs, not as in a legislative initiative, but just something that we do as a county those line items should be moved into the general operating budget. And I think some of that has actually happened. I think a lot of the initiatives like Legislator Walter with the mental health things, those are things that in the past may have been done under legislative programs funding, but in reality now they're being put in as, you know, actual resolutions with some substance behind it, and we're doing them that way. And I think for the most part, that's the direction we should go. There are some things that won't fall into that. And I think the various committees, if there's something they want to see as the mission of their committee, they want to see something happen, then that's what they should be bringing forward. The how it gets done in the end is something after the fact that we can decide, but the money, how much money are they looking for to accomplish goal XYZ? That's the part that we were hoping that people would have responded to by now. So Legislator Walter, then Perkins.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting, and I've thought about this quite a bit since Tracy first brought it up probably 2 years ago. You know, there's the difference between the programs that fill a gap that we're not providing and they're filling a gap, and then the funding that sort of helps enhance a program that maybe that kind of funding allows it to go out and get other funding or test out an expansion of services or whatever. I honestly feel like if there's a program that's consistently filling in a gap for us, that absolutely should be something we should be considering having as a regular budget item. Like if that's always what it does every single year, fill in a gap, then, you know, why isn't it through the appropriate department as a contract? Just like we know that Family Services fills in gaps and it consistently does every single year. So therefore it's a funding stream through DSS because they have that contracting. And I think that it probably wouldn't be that hard to pull out the ones that are just every year filling in a gap and attaching them to the right departments, which then leaves us with what else do we have? And I think, again, that's the idea that there are some programs that, and this is really a once a year almost kind of thing, maybe 2 years, but like where a program really needs that extra hand, Or it's an innovative need. Like if all of a sudden we're finding COVID that we really need to help enhance some program that delivers food, then maybe that would be kind of a use. But I think, like, again, separating out those that are absolutely consistently just doing what we are not doing. And I don't think it would be that hard. There's not that many on here. We should really be talking about which department do they go into and basically add them as maybe even budget amendments onto those particular departments as contracted agencies.
Thank you, Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. I just wanted to, so did Cornell Cooperative, did Soil and Water go to Environment and Cornell Cooperative go to Programs and libraries go to Programs with their budgets? No.
No, not this year.
So they weren't heard in the fall? They didn't come forward, bring anything forward to the committee in the fall?
No, they submitted to me documents only.
Amber, just to follow up, I mean, is Cornell Cooperative asking basically for the same $400,000 that it asks for every year? More or less? I mean, I know we don't need to get into the very specific. I guess the question is, and you don't have to give me that answer because maybe it sounds like we're really talking about it. But, you know, even if we just separated out Cornell Cooperative, which is probably, what is it, 2/3 of the whole legislative program funding, and at least identified where the best place is for Cornell Cooperative, since they ask for the same amount every year, everyone feels pretty convinced that they need it. It's fulfilling services that we need. You know, I don't know if it's just a simpler, easier answer to just start with doing a resolution, a budget amendment that just shifts Cornell Cooperative at least over. And I don't know, if, you know, soil, it probably is the next second highest, but I guess I'll stop with those, even if it's just those two.
Cornell Cooperative requested $350,000 and Soil and Water requested $91,500.
I was just saying, that and the library, and then it's a whole other story, right? And so I think if we focus on either just those three or even just Cornell Cooperative for now, which is such a huge chunk of this, and do the right thing by them, then we can explore with other programs. But it just seems like we've been talking about this for 2 years. Why don't we just implement, at least for one of them, what you're suggesting? And that's to you, Legislator Bartel.
Yeah, I think let's definitely put this on Monday's agenda. And maybe, Amber, if you could please circulate the requests from any agencies that came in, just so that Ways and Means can see those as well.
And even
are those the only three agencies that submitted, or is it just the two that submitted?
The libraries is the third.
The libraries.
And those three agencies have their own distinct enabling legislation that says they're contracting with the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Let's say Walter, and then he.
Yeah, just a question maybe to Bert or Chris. Like, do you see any reason why something like Cornell Cooperative shouldn't be just integrated into the executive budget? Because that would be good to hear.
Yeah, we agree. Yeah, we think that it's something that happens year to year, and it would give them consistency. So we agree that would be helpful.
Just to help me, I'm trying to juggle a lot of calendar stuff here, but this Monday meeting was never scheduled. It's now going to be scheduled as for 72 hours to meet the deadline for Monday.
And instead of it being, you know, we talk about joint meeting with the legislative programs, but maybe even just instead of the committee as a whole, I think it may be better just to have all of the chairs of the various committees at that meeting instead. I don't know what everybody else thinks of that, but thoughts?
I'm just not, we could ask them. Everyone's always invited, but I think really it's programs that's most critical. Environment has direct, you know, responsibility for soil and water.
Anything else? All right, can I have a motion to adjourn? Oh, let's march, go ahead.
Thank you. I was not part that I could see. The Director of Internal Audit and Control was not part of the earlier conversation, so I wanted to take the opportunity to just brief you on a couple items regarding that, and I'll try to be really brief because I know it's been a while already. First of all, the position is not new. It existed from 2013 to 2019. This position is directly responsible for overseeing our internal audit function, which provides savings and cost recovery for Ulster County. And we have a bunch of documented savings in a memo to you, but I think it's much more extensive than that. That was just what I felt comfortable actually really going to the penny on. And so this position will return much more than it costs. And in fact, I think it justifies the entire office. And we have not been able to perform the number of internal audits that we should be. 2 or 3 a year is nothing. You guys should be getting a lot more out of us, and we just can't do it without that position here. But I want to mention one or two other items with regard to it. You know, when this position was budgeted in 2020, it was budgeted at a higher salary. I don't know if you guys are aware, and some of you that have been here for a while know that we had turnover problems in that position, and it was actually being paid lower than the positions that it supervises, the senior auditors. So it was bumped up in 2020. When we proposed it this, and it was kept vacant in 2020 because of COVID, and it was actually left out of the 2021 budget because of COVID, we respectfully asked to bring it back. We proposed to bring it back at a slightly lower hourly rate than what we had gotten in the 2020 budget. But I need to point some things out. We were not aware of the raises that were occurring, and this position is going to be suffering from the same compression issues that you were raising other places. It will be supervising positions that make substantially more. And furthermore, so now it is budgeted for 78,410. It should be, with the management raise, should be more at 83,000. It's going to be supervising positions that make 84 and 82,000. And more importantly, Dutchess County has this position open at $95,000. Now, I think that this adding of 60 budgeted positions is a clear indication that we need a salary study. We had a contract with Evergreen for this. It was not completed. That contract was terminated after one-fifth of the work in 2019. I have not seen the results of that, even that first tranche of work, but I can tell you we desperately need a salary study for many positions in the county. And I want to say one other thing that hasn't been on your radar, and I know other electeds don't want to say it. The Periodic Compensation Review Committee was not convened this year, and it should have been under the charter. Now, Nina Poshpak's position, you guys, has not had a raise since 2005. And my position has not had a raise since its creation. The sheriff's department, the sheriff, has not had a raise since 2009. So I am just warning you that there are some things that are out of whack. And I think the main question here is, why have we not done a salary study? Why is it not budgeted for 2022? So this is a real opportunity to take a look at those issues. Listen, you guys, I may come back to you crying that I can't fill this position now, especially seeing how difficult it is for Robin Lois, who was calling me for resumes to fill the job. So I wanted to throw all that on the table. You know, I think I budgeted this position too low because we were in the middle of COVID and I was thinking that the economy's not that great. It won't be that hard. No, you know what? It's going to be hard to fill this position, especially with these raises, these CSEA raises, where they're going to be supervising people that are making more. So I beg you, I respectfully beg you to keep the position in the budget. And I may be coming to you to say, like, and honestly, I'll just say it right now, like, this position should be budgeted higher than what it is. Thank you. I'm here to answer any questions you have.
Yes, they are.
Yes, I think, March, that's exactly why we're taking a look at anything over the 3%. And you heard me just say it myself, you know, we need a salary study. That, and I think that's something that may come out of our conversation on Monday. But I'm going to take a really close look at all of these things and ensure that there we have a plan on how we're going to proceed or not proceed before we get. And my question to you, though, is the compression issue, is that a pure base salary or is that including overtime and enhancements and any longevity? It's
base.
Just base. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Gavars. Thank you.
All right. Now, can I get a motion to adjourn? Say Walter, second. Archer. All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. All right. So our next meeting now is scheduled for 4 p.m. on Monday. We are not having our meeting tomorrow, just to be clear. Thank you all and have a good weekend.
Thank you. Bye.